Welcome to Oh, I Like That, a podcast about things we like and occasionally things we don't. I'm Rachel Wilkerson Miller.
And I'm Sally Tamarkin. And Rachel, it kind of feels like spring, even though this particular day we're recording, it's like incredibly cold.
Yeah, I would say the vibe today for me is like spring light, spring junior, spring-ish. Like we're ramping up to spring, but it's also that frustrating time of year where like it's spring in your heart, but like it's not actually spring yet.
Yeah, exactly. And I think like this year more than any other year, I'm really feeling like spring is a feeling you feel rather than a season that, you know, exists objectively.
Agree.
Because I'm feeling like the vibe for me is like, it feels like it might be time to be optimistic with like 50 question marks after it.
Yeah, with a lot of asterisks and like some disclaimers, caveats, all of that. It feels like a time for a little bit of cautious optimism.
Yeah, just a tiny, tiny smattering of cautious optimism. You know, if, you know, depending on when you're like listening to this, like you may know that we recently in the US administered 3 million vaccine doses in one day, which is like great and puts us on a trajectory to getting enough people vaccinated that we might reach some kind of herd immunity situation, which is like shocking to believe.
Yeah, I'm like shaking my head in sort of disbelief because it just feels too good to be true. And I don't know. This year has been so disappointing and so bad. And like there have been so many instances of like we could do things the right way, but we do them the wrong way instead, that it just feels difficult to think that like we're doing things the right way and we're going to keep doing things the right way. So I look at all this vaccine news and I just feel very like big if true. Like,
yeah, yeah, <know. totally. laughs> Yeah, 2021, big if true. I think that's the right attitude. And I think that like we've been burned a lot of times over the last year by having hope and feeling optimistic about like the human condition. So, you know, and I also was noticing that like I've turned into a little bit of a like just asking questions type of person because anytime I see, even in our group chat, like we'll be sharing links and talking about like numbers and statistics of vaccinations or infections or things going down or things looking good. And I can't ever believe that things look good. And I like do some Googling and I'm like, this must be being like reported poorly. There's no way this pandemic is ever going to end. But like, you know, again, like big if true, optimism, 50 question marks.
Yeah. I also feel like we're in a period where a little bit of warm weather and a little bit of daylight is doing a lot. And I feel like last week I heard from multiple different people, like, do I feel hope? Is this good? Like what's going on? And I think it was the combination of like increasing vaccine news that was positive coupled with like in New York, at least we had like a 68 degree day. And I think those two things together, I don't know. I mean, it's always kind of like funny / depressing when you realize like, oh, the thing that I needed was just some sunshine and a walk. Like that was enough to like pull me out of this crushing feeling of sadness, which I think is happening for a lot of people right now. So I think in a year that has felt so endless and things are not changing or they're changing for the worse, it's sort of wild to be like, oh, right. Like spring is coming, summer is coming as they do every year, but it still feels a little bit surprising and I think delightful as a result.
Totally. Yeah. And like, you know, I think many of us it'll take us a long time to trust again, but hopefully in the next like few months, we'll feel like we can trust that things are getting at least incrementally better.
Yeah.
Speaking of time marching on and having feelings and reflections and so on, we thought we would take this episode to do kind of like a reflection on 1 year into the pandemic.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I think anniversaries naturally make people reflect and look back, and I've seen a lot of that happening. I'm curious, Sally, how you're feeling about just the anniversary of it all. Like, are you somebody who does feel sort of a sense of something, I can't come up with the right word for it, but like, do you feel something around anniversaries traditionally? Like, do you feel like you're having just a natural sense of like, it's been a year, I need to reflect? Or are you doing it because you're seeing other people do it? Or like, what's your overall feeling on an anniversary, particularly one like this?
So I think as far as like anniversaries go generally, I'm like agnostic. Like, I think they can be delightful and they can be fun to celebrate and Andrea and I often celebrate our anniversary, but sometimes we forget about it. I think it's one of those things that, like, for me, if I make up my mind to like observe it and make a big deal out of it, that's fun and great. Other anniversaries, like, I tend to think a lot about like sadder anniversaries. Mm-hmm. Those just have like a heavier weight in my life. Mm-hmm. So I feel kind of like predisposed to be thinking about the pandemic anniversary, particularly because for the last year, it's been very hard to think about anything besides the pandemic for mm-hmm. kind of for like a sustained period of time. I certainly have like thought and talked about other things, but like the pandemic was kind of always at the very least in the background. Mm-hmm. And so I almost feel like, you know, thinking about the 1 year anniversary is an opportunity to think about it kind of intentionally, which is different than it just sort of being this ambient thing that haunts you, like this, right. this ghost that just like follows you around. Mm-hmm. That's kind of where I'm at with it. What about you? Like anniversaries in general slash this one as well.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I enjoy an anniversary or a birthday or whatever the case may be and tend to reflect, but not so much. I'm with you that sadder anniversaries tend to crop up more. And I think generally, I don't know about you, but like, even if I don't want to think about an anniversary, I'm going to think about it. Like there's something about the way that time works and the way our bodies just like imprint trauma and grief and sadness that it's hard not to just catch feelings of it here and there when you're going about your business. Like I think there's something that's like, you can't avoid it even if you want to. At least that's how it is for me. And so I'm feeling a bit that way this year where if you had asked me on like February 25th, if I was going to like have any feelings about this upcoming month and the anniversaries contained in it, I would have said I don't think so. And then like last week, it just was kind of hitting me here and there and in small ways. And I wasn't really expecting it. But I think that it's like, I don't know, I think there's a very like human tendency to connect with what you were doing a year ago at this time. So it's hard not to think about it and to feel emotional about it, even if you can't totally explain why. Another thing that I've been thinking about, and I don't know if this will resonate with anyone, but I found that when I was going through really difficult times in my life where things were very uncertain, the start of a new month and then the start of a new year made me feel really, really anxious, just like a feeling of dread in my stomach. There was something about the passing of time that would just sort of like surprise me anew and make me feel really uneasy. And I think it is a time when like if everybody's reflecting like they are at the end of the year, looking ahead to the new year, and you're like, well, nothing's going to change for me or things are still going to be bad for me, like it can feel really upsetting. So I'm not feeling that way right now. But if anyone is feeling that way, I think that's also really normal. It's just like a sense of anxiety around both that feeling of reflection and that feeling of looking ahead and not totally knowing what's coming. Because even though we do know some things, like we've still got to get through this, and there's still a lot of things uncertain. Even if vaccines are widely distributed, I think there's still a ton of uncertainty. So I wouldn't blame anyone for feeling that sense of just impending doom right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am totally right there with you. And you know, when I'm like lying in bed at night, I'm not feeling the like spring is here optimism. There's mm-hmm. definitely more of a feeling of like dread and doom about like, but what's going to happen after that, quote unquote. I don't know what after that is, but yeah, I mean, it's an emotionally complicated year we've been having.
Yeah.
Before we talk about that aspect of it though, I'm wondering, do you remember like the last things you did in the world before you started to quarantine?
I do. So I remember everything very well. And I also have like the photos on my camera roll to like put all of it to certain dates. So February 27th was the day that my girlfriend listened to the episode of The Daily that scared the shit out of her and that she went to CVS to get hand sanitizer and like got the last two bottles. Mm-hmm. And at that point, Vice had been covering this a little bit here and there. Like I'm actually surprised in looking back how early on we were covering like how long to wash your hands for and things like that. So I was aware of it, but I was in that like, you know, mild cases mindset. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't feeling worried. So February 27th was where we got pretty worried and started to really hunker down. But we still did things that in hindsight, I'm just like, it is a miracle that we didn't get sick. We went to a show with our friend Terry on March 3rd, where it was a one-man show. You could see the spit flying out of his mouth, illuminated by the lights. We were sitting in close quarters and sharing food. Like we were washing our hands and sanitizing our hands a lot and talking about the coronavirus while we were sitting there. And even when we left, we like ended up walking several blocks versus getting on the subway immediately. So we were having that fear, but it was all tied to like surfaces. So let's see, the following weekend, so it would have been around like the 6th and 7th, we went out with friends to the Gutter, which is a bowling alley, which is also where like the first case of Ebola occurred in the United States several years ago. And that's where we decided to go.
This actual bowling alley?
This specific bowling alley.
That's incredible. Well done.
So we went there. Again, we were like washing our hands a lot and like, you know, not sharing drinks or anything like that, but it was packed with people. That was the true last thing we did. Like after that, we had not worked, we both worked from home that Friday. And then Vice shut down on Monday. And I can't remember when my girlfriend's workplace did, but like she didn't go back after that either. And so then it was like that Monday we were like, okay, that's it for us.
What was that, like the 8th or the 9th?
I think it was the 8th or the 9th, yeah.
So the very last thing I did, which I think is like kind of funny and ironic, is I got a haircut on March 8th.
Wow. And I mean, that was, you know, good timing.
It's actually really good planning on my part. Mm-hmm. And I also bought this like cute little plant. It's like the first plant I've ever bought myself. Mm-hmm. And I wish I could report that it's like now a giant flourishing plant, but it's like a slightly bigger than it was a year ago kind of flourishing plant. Mm-hmm. But it's been cool because it's been hanging out with me for the last year.
That's nice.
Which is nice. And it really was just like a couple tiny sprouts and now it has like a bunch. But we also, I remember that we had a friend come visit us that weekend and it seemed like that this like characterizes a lot of my mindset at the beginning of the pandemic was, is it totally going to be read as an overreaction if I don't want to do this thing? Mm-hmm. And I actually was like, I don't want to get my hair cut. Is it an overreaction? And I remember talking about it with Andrea and deciding that was probably fine. I remember thinking like, I don't think I have the data to support that this friend shouldn't come visit, but I don't know. And I remember that when he arrived, he like put his arms out to hug us and was like, should we? And we were like, yeah, let's hug. And then after I was like, man. And a few days after that, I had plans to go out to dinner with my friend Carl at this deli that we both really like. And it's this deli in Philly where you're sitting so close to people that even in normal times, you're sort of like, this feels germy. So like definitely on like Wednesday the 10th, I was like, dude, I'm sorry. Like there's no way, like I can't, even if it's like safe, I feel so freaked out.
Yeah.
So the last thing I really did was on March 8th, but like I was looking it up to tweet about it because that's the kind of person I am. On February 25th, I ordered hand sanitizer and I ordered these 5 tiny 1 ounce Bath and Body Works. Like it's like one is like cherry Merlot, one is cucumber melon. And I was like, all right, well, I got hand sanitizer, so I think we're probably good.
Yeah.
I had five ounces total. But I remember also I remember being on the phone with my therapist and like pacing back and forth and being like just so scared. And also like there was this period of time, which I guess I don't have to get into this now, but just quickly, there was a period of time in the very beginning where I felt like I was very scared. Mm-hmm. And my world was not caught up to how scary it was yet. And I think it was just because I was working at Self, which is like a health and wellness brand. And so I was talking to people all day, every day who were reporting on this and stuff. So I just, when I think back to that time of like early to mid-March, I have this like intense, like almost like bodily memory of just the anxiety and the fear and the sort of like franticness, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So one thing I'm curious about is rewinding a few more months. At the start of 2020, what were you thinking that the year was going to look like? Did you have any big plans or goals for the year that were abruptly cut short? Or like what was your hope for 2020 going into it?
So there were two big things. One is that we were going to take like a big old road trip in the summer and like drive cross country, which we're really, really psyched about, to visit friends in California and like all along the way. And it quickly became clear that that was definitely going to be canceled. The other thing is like I was feeling really psyched about my birthday because in 2018 on my birthday I had an appendectomy and the next year I had a good birthday. But like I just feel like ever since the appendectomy birthday, I've been just trying to have really good birthdays. And I feel like other than 2019, 2020 and 2021 are both going to be like pandemic birthdays. So, you know, that was the thing that I was looking forward to. But truly, it was really like the road trip that was like the biggest bummer. And, you know, just like the ordinary things that you do, like having friends come visit and stay for the weekend, mm-hmm. going home for Passover, like just like the normal, like visiting with friends and family type things. Like,
yeah.
especially because we moved to Philly really recently. And so we've only really recently have like a guest room. And one of the reasons that we were so psyched about that is because we were like, we're gonna have people over and right. like, it's going to be great. And so that has sort of yet to come to fruition. So I think those are the big things. What about for you?
I think my big thing was like, okay, I've got this book coming out. I'm going to really throw myself into like the marketing of this book. Like I'm going to put myself out there more. I'm going to do talks at bookstores or at, you know, sort of any opportunity that I get for this book. Like I'm going to take it. I'm going to like challenge myself to be willing to be in the spotlight a little bit more and to like really sell this book, you know, like, but specifically by being in public more, like going and doing things more, which obviously couldn't happen. I did what I could virtually, but yeah, that was, it was just like, well, you thought like there's no way that could happen. Mm-hmm. So that was my big goal that, you know, it's fine. Yeah. Not the end of the world.
Next book. You'll get them next book.
Yeah. Saying this.
What about, do you want to talk about like kind of emotional trajectory of the year? Mm-hmm. I'm wondering like what was like spring like for you, like March, April, May? Because like I said, for me, I feel like it was a lot of like just feeling terror.
Mm-hmm.
Once different cities issued stay-at-home orders, I felt a relief that this was being taken seriously,
mm-hmm.
but fear and then just intense, fiery anger
yeah.
at like people who wouldn't stay home and people who wouldn't. At that point, I don't even really think it was wearing masks because I don't think masks became a thing until like later, early summer maybe.
I think masks were more, I think the mask conversation was happening in like April.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think. I could be wrong, but like late April at the latest, I would guess.
Late April, okay. I'm already like misremembering. So what were the first couple of months for you like? I want to do some like emotional time travel and hear about like your state of mind at that point.
So I think that in March, my state of mind was despair, fear, and then like I have work to do. Like I'm throwing myself into work. And I actually think that was a through line for most of last year for me in a way that I don't think is common necessarily. And like, I wouldn't necessarily recommend. Like, I think I was really fortunate that the work that I do and was doing at the time allowed me to be useful and have a sense of purpose when I needed it. Like, if I had been doing some different kind of work, I think I would have had a really hard time with it. But like, for me, it was like, I'm reading all this, I'm consuming all of this, but I can also contribute to this in a meaningful way. Like I can create service content that actually helps people deal with some of this stuff. So that for me was always kind of like the thing that was keeping me rooted and keeping me like busy and moving forward. So in March, it was like work. You know, my first pandemic article was like how to work from home without feeling like a garbage slug at the end of the day. And so when people responded well to that, I was like, okay, great. What next? Give me more problems to solve. Give me more ways to be helpful. So that was like a big chunk of it. But then it was also just, I remember feeling so, so, so sad. Mm. And I think that like the sadness and the despair really continued like through spring and even into the summer. Like I just remember reading the New York Times so many mornings and just feeling so, 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 so sad about everything. And like, I don't know, it just was like overwhelming. I still feel sad about everything. That, mm-hmm. that hasn't totally gone away, but it was really, really present in March, April, May.
Mm-hmm.
What about you?
Yeah. I mean, I think same. Like, I think immense like sadness and for me also like anger. And I think there was a period of time too where like, you know, we were reading a lot about like hospitals having to ration healthcare
right.
and all this stuff. And that was really terrifying to me. And I was like, this is some like, you know, dystopic sci-fi shit.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it really scary and really overwhelming. I think that I've like felt more angry than sad for most of the year.
Yeah.
But I think that's just like how I roll. I don't think that's because like the events of the year have been like sadder than they are maddening or more maddening than they are sad.
Right.
Like, you know? And I think like the next thing for me, the next sort of like emotional, like the next phase of my emotional journey, if you will, was that like, it was almost like, it felt almost novel. Like I remember like in, I think like June or maybe July, we each took, Andrea and I took a week off of work together, and we had like a staycation. Mm-hmm. And we actually had like a very nice time. Like it felt really relaxing, mm-hmm. and we stayed off the internet, which was really nice. And I remember like I had been telling a friend of mine, like, you know, it's okay to, a staycation might feel actually really nice. And she and her partner did it many months later, and they like didn't enjoy it. It was like not good. But I think it was at that point so far into the pandemic that like being home together no longer felt sort of novel.
Right.
Which when we did it, it was like, it was like a new way of life. And not that it was like good, or we were like psyched, or like the silver lining is that like we get to do this novel thing. It really truly was just this like period of being like, oh, this daily life feels really different now. And there's something about that like novelty that I think kept me going for a while, you know, and then soon after that turned into like just extreme boredom and isolation followed by more anger, you know?
Yeah.
What about you? What was your like kind of next phase?
I think in the spring, I would say late April and then through May, it was the same despair. It was the same, I have work to do, but there was a sense of like DIY spirit that was sort of infiltrating everything. So it was like, we're growing scallions on the windowsill and we are figuring out how to, you know, do my hair without my hairdresser. And we're figuring out how to safely get groceries. And we're just like, we were just figuring things out all the time. And we were like, it was like peak adapting things from our old lives into our new lives. So I feel like we did a lot of like, that was when we were watching Drag Race. And so we would do like drag brunch on Saturday mornings. And I remember like making breakfast tacos and pickling onions. And that felt really nice. And we were doing duvet o'clock every night. So we were like putting the duvet on the bed and pulling the monitor over and having like this transformation midday. And we started doing like Instagram dance workouts. So it was this period of like discovery, I guess, or just like trying things. You know, at that point we had realized, I remember the daily episode that we listened to that was like, the fastest the vaccine has ever been developed is 4 years. And I remember feeling just so sad that day. And for a few days afterward. But I think also it was like, after that kind of passed, it was like, okay, well, this is life for the foreseeable future. So like, what do we make of it? And how do we cope with that? So I think that was it was something to do, at least, you know, there were little breaks from the fear and the sadness.
Yeah, I totally think those periods of being like, okay, I guess this is life, let's figure out how to adapt to it, in a weird way, like kind of gave me at least a thing to do. And of course, like I'm coming from a place of immense privilege where like I already worked from home. I didn't have a job that required me to like leave or, you know, deliver mail or be someone's like healthcare provider or whatever. So it was like, what it was like mostly about was figuring out how to like what everyday life was going to look like now.
Yeah, definitely. And then after that, it was like June and the whole country was in the streets protesting. And I was having like such an intense month because it was like my book came out in May. So I was doing a ton of, that was when I was finally getting to do all that, like the virtual events that I had wanted to do. And I think a great way to sum it up is that I got invited to go on ABC News to talk about the protests, Pride and the pandemic in like a 4 minute segment.
Oh my God.
Like they just took me from one thing to another. And like, I just remember I when I watched the video back, I was like, wow, when I'm not talking, I'm just sitting there, like just sort of like, I look so tired and I look so like, just, I was just like so exhausted. And it was just like, exhausted isn't quite the right word. It was just like, there was so much happening. And we were also trying to move apartments, which was like a whole other complicated logistical thing. We moved ourselves after like waiting in as long as we possibly could because we were each paying double rent in the meantime. Like it was a whole mess. And so like trying to do all that at once was just, I don't recommend it. So that was just like a really, it was just ultimately like a very difficult and very dehumanizing time, because as much as the protests were really galvanizing and validating, it was like, yeah, but like we got to this point by just like, you know, seeing Black Death go viral. And so that was really rough. And so for me, the end of June when the press events eased up and we were in the new apartment was the first time I was able to sort of like feel a little bit of relief and a little bit of like, okay, now I can just be here and like now I can just be here for a minute and catch my breath. And so that's when I started to feel a little bit of like, I don't know if relief is the right word, but you know, we moved into an apartment, with a bedroom after being at my girlfriend's studio for months. So like that was major. And it also had outdoor space. So like those two things were just like so unexpected and so different, and also came with like the projects that go with moving into a new home. So that was like a nice change of gears while being stuck inside, some options, some opportunities. And it was also, I think that was when, you know, people started to go outside again. We didn't, but like the whole vibe kind of shifted at that point for a lot of people. But I still remember feeling a bit like, you guys are just going outside into the park. Like I was still reading all the bad news and still feeling that we were still in a pandemic. And I remember it being really weird to be like, everyone's just going to the beach with five of their closest friends and not wearing masks and like sharing iced tea and beer. Like, okay, huh. Interesting. Like I found myself feeling really thrown off by the like really different worlds and universes that I felt like we were in.
Yeah. This summer, I think, was like a really weird and bad and sad time for a lot of reasons. Like you said, like Black Death going viral and people figuring out how to show up for the things we wanted to show up for in the middle of a pandemic, and the police violence, like especially I think people who live in cities, like seeing that all around all the time. And I think was a really galvanizing moment. And I think like between that and the impending election, like those two things, like just, you know, becoming more involved in like mutual aid and like activism and advocacy were like a big part of what was taking up what I was like giving my time and my like emotional space to in the summer. But it was also just a really sad time and a really confusing one, I think, too, because like you said, Rachel, like, you know, people were starting to go out into the world in a way that seemed also to me like just really ill-advised. And it was another time where I felt very out of sync with almost everyone, you know, basically besides you and like three other people. Like,
right.
I was just like, what? I feel like people are pretending that the way they're behaving isn't going to make this deadly pandemic keep going. And that's like just a really bad way to feel. It's like a very isolating way to feel. Mm-hmm. And I remember also there being like kind of an ongoing conversation at that time about like what to do if like you have a group of friends who has different like levels of comfort with like socializing, because, you know, people wanted to do like quote unquote distance hangs and stuff like that, and like how to handle that and everything. And, you know, like in my relationship, like we had to have a conversation about like, you know, because we have different like comfort levels. I have no comfort level with anything. And Andrea is like a person who does things based on the data, and which I really respect, but I do things based on data plus like intense fear, you know what I mean? So
yeah, I know what you mean.
So like, you know, there were like conversations to be had, and I feel like because it was warm and people were out of doors, like that negotiation was like a huge part of the summer.
Yeah, I agree. So then it was fall, and which feels like not very long ago at all. Like I remember sitting in this exact spot talking about the upcoming fall and preparing for winter. And, you know, fall was kind of a blur because it was just at that point for me, it was like looming dread. Like we know what's coming, and there's sort of nothing we can do to stop it, even though like there is a lot we could do to stop it. And it was really frustrating to just feel like I don't know. It just is like the, you know, the Titanic with the iceberg warning. It's like you've got the warnings right there. You've got every expert saying the late fall and then the winter is going to be worse. It's going to be really bad. And everybody's like talking about it, but also everyone's just doing what they want to do. And so I just felt a sense of like, I think one thing that I often thought during this pandemic is I don't want to sort of indulge the feeling of like, let's get this over with. Let's get on with it. Like, I don't want to wish the time away, because if something happens to me or to one of my loved ones, like I will regret having wished this time away. Like, this is time I can't ever get back. And so I don't want to wish it away. But I did have a sense of like, I'm like, let's do it, because we know what's coming. But also like, who wants to run headfirst into tragedy, which is how it felt at the same time. So I think that was like just that feeling of like just watching something happen in you know, a slow motion train wreck that there wasn't very much we could do to stop it, which felt bad.
Hear. It felt really bad. I felt, you know, between winter coming and the election, I felt like totally overwhelmed with like how potentially bad everything was going to get. And it, you know, it just, it feels unbearable. It's like, things are structurally really bad. This isn't like a matter of like, you know, if I just like take a hot bath and like read a book, everything's going to feel a little bit better. And actually, I'm realizing now that the last time I felt reason to be optimistic, 50 question marks, was when it became clear that Trump was going to lose, which wasn't until like after the election, and then like when it was going to be clear that he like wasn't going to be able to take the election and stuff like that.
Right.
So, you know, I felt I also was like doing a fair amount of like just participating in like volunteering and activism. And that was very, that's like one of the things that made me feel a little bit more okay and a little bit less like dread. I think we even talked about it on Oh, I Like That.
Yeah, I think we did.
So, I mean, that was the other thing too, is that like fall was a moment of feeling like, man, we're so fucked. We're heading right towards the iceberg. And also it's just these like little pockets of like, some things might be okay.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds right. And then it was January. And for me, January was like every Wednesday was bad. It was like the Capitol riot. It was the impeachment. It was the inauguration. And then we got diagnosed with COVID. Like that was January, a month of Wednesdays, the worst day of the week after Tuesday. So January is just like a blur of bad because numbers were going up and bad things were happening politically. And it was just like, it was hard to feel hopeful or good. The, you know, the inauguration was something, but like it just felt so, so scary and so hard won that it didn't do a lot to alleviate fear. And I also, I don't know about you, but I didn't feel excited about Biden. Yeah,
you do know about me, Rachel. You know. You know how I felt about that.
Yeah. So it was like, oh, some relief in the form of this guy who like I have my feelings about. So it was a, it was a blur, and it wasn't the roughest month, but it was like, it's just another sad month.
It was a sad month. Another sad month. For sure. Yeah. And I also, during that time, was feeling really angry about people who were like traveling for the holidays and gathering for the holidays. And, you know, this whole entire time, I've also felt incredibly mad that our government won't pay people to stay home and is just letting people die, letting poor people die, letting Black people and people of color, Indigenous people die, like in droves. And at the same time, as I've said, I'm also very mad at the individual members of the owning class who have decided that like they don't have to, you know, like they don't have to like minimize risk and minimize harm. And I think I spent a lot of the winter season just feeling a real lot of rage.
Yeah, it was really hard to watch, particularly in January when like the numbers went up exactly as we were told they would go up. And it was because everyone sort of thought they were the exception to the rule. And like even people who knew objectively that it was a bad idea to travel still did it. And I still haven't been able to make sense of that. And I still feel really just confused, sort of baffled by that and sad by that. And I think that to me, white supremacy and American exceptionalism are like really tied up in this sense of like, well, if I go out, I probably won't get sick. And if I do get sick, it won't be that bad. Like, what is it like to assume that something bad won't happen to you? But if it does, you will simply
be fine.
Like you will simply survive it. And like, that's just not something I can really relate to. And I don't know. I haven't totally worked this out yet. Like, I don't quite know what to make of it yet. It's something I'm still processing and trying to figure out. But I feel very disappointed, you know, not necessarily surprised, but still really sad by it and still really disappointed by it. And I wish that it hadn't been true. And it's even more frustrating after the protests last summer it's really frustrating after the protests of last summer when it was like, okay, people are getting it. They're examining their own role in upholding white supremacy, to then turn around and see those same people do whatever they wanted, knowing that it was going to affect people of color and other marginalized groups the most. And it's like, I don't know. I don't know how you can hold both of those things and not grapple with that on some level and think about it and think about your own role. And so I found that frustrating. Like, obviously, I have a ton of privilege that allowed me to stay home. So I'm mostly thinking of people who like I know well and know they have the same level of privilege to stay home. And so I'm just kind of like, what's going on here? Like, why am I choosing to stay home and you're not? Like, what's the difference in our mindset and our worldview? Because for me, it is a decision that is motivated by taking care of other people and protecting other people. I thought that's something you cared about, too.
And
what's happening?
And it's something you perform thinking about and caring about. You meaning the person you're addressing. Yeah, yeah. Like, what does right. it mean to say that you have an analysis of white supremacy and American exceptionalism and all those harmful things, but then still behave in the world in a way that hurts the people you're saying you don't think should be hurt anymore? Like, what is it yeah. like to not care if you harm your community or other communities by what you're doing? Because over the summer, like you were saying, that this is the thing you really cared about. And I found that that's been a very frustrating thing about this whole year. I feel like it has, between the pandemic and the like increased spotlight on police violence against Black people in our country, have like, I think, shown us some things about like people we know and our friends mm-hmm. and how people are making decisions. And, you know, I had a lot of conversations over the year where I have talked to people in my life who were like, people asking me like, do you think it's like wrong that I'm doing this thing? Or like, I'm afraid to tell you that I'm doing this thing because, you know, and I don't ever want to be a friend people are like afraid to tell they're doing a thing, but I do mm-hmm. want to be a friend where people, because of like a thing I've said or a thing I've modeled, it makes people think twice about their decisions, you know? Mm-hmm. But like, it's, I don't know. I feel like we'll maybe do another episode on this, but I think a lot of us are like coming out of this with like maybe fewer friends than we had going into it, or different kinds mm-hmm. of friends, or like in some ways, like I think stronger relationships with some people than what we went into this pandemic with, because I think it's been like a time of like just really exposing people's kind of best and worst behaviors.
I think so too. I think that it's like the way we were all sort of leaning or oriented, I think. And I think when I say we and we all, I mean like us as a society, I mean us as individuals, like I think it just sort of like entrenched those instincts. And, you know, when we look at the country, the United States, it's like the worst things about the United States, like we did that, like that we did more of the bad things that we've been known to do. Some people did more of the good things too. I don't want to say that they didn't, but I think it's just like the things that were already existed just got pushed to further extremes versus like totally new things happening. And so I think that's true for friendships too, that friendships, and again, I think that you're right, that this is a very good topic for a future episode, but I think that, you know, the friendships that were already strong got stronger, the friendships that weren't or that already had fault lines started to crack. And the question of what our friendships are going to look like after this, I think, is absolutely worthy of another episode. And if you guys have any specific questions you'd like us to address, send them our way, because I think we have a lot to say about this.
Yeah,
topic.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Man, I feel like I could just talk forever about this whole thing of like people's ethical decision making during the pandemic, but I'm sort of tired of hearing myself talk about it anyway. So maybe we should just move on.
So as we look toward spring, summer, allegedly widespread vaccine distribution, and a future where it's safe to leave our homes, what are some things from the past year that you think you'll keep doing and that will stay with you?
Okay, so I think like a couple things I would love to keep doing. One is just like FaceTiming with friends more.
Definitely.
You know, I'm sometimes like, why was I ever just talking on the phone to people? Why wasn't I like always FaceTiming my friends? So FaceTiming mm-hmm. friends more. I think like a big one for me is like being like, I'm writing off today because today sucks, instead of like feeling like I have to like persevere. I think that like this year has given me a much more, has helped me really like hone and have a much more like acute analysis of like the way capitalism shows up in how I think of myself and how I think of myself as a member of a community. And I feel, mm-hmm. and how it like turns us against each other and makes us think about ourselves as individuals, not as members of communities and so on. And so, and I can't help but think about how so much of my, I have to persevere, I have to get through this, is about productivity, that is about mm-hmm. capitalism, versus like, I have to get through this because it'll benefit someone or be good for the world or whatever. And then mm-hmm. the soothing power of reality TV. I have never watched mm-hmm. much reality TV, but I watched a lot over the last year and found it to be engrossing and soothing in a way that I really needed. So I'm just going to keep that in mind for like mm-hmm. 2021 and beyond.
those are great ones.
Yeah. What about you?
Okay. Let's see. Well, I will say that from 2015 to 2018, I experienced the exact sort of traumatic life event that like perfectly, I would say, prepared me to deal with the pandemic and sort of this small life within four walls of like incredible uncertainty and unknown and feeling really isolated. So I feel like I had a lot of good stuff in place going into this that helped me, and that also I was already kind of continuing to do, so there weren't as many surprises for me this year. But I will say that I'm with you on FaceTiming friends more and also just making more in-person events into Zoom meetings or keeping a Zoom aspect mm-hmm. of things. Like, let's all agree that we're going to keep doing that. It's great for accessibility. It's great for like a number mm-hmm. of reasons. So that's when I want to keep going. I will say that also like fancy sweatpants and no bras like is a lifestyle that I am like, I just simply can't picture wearing a bra again. I don't want to say it won't happen, but at this point, I'm not looking to bring them back full time by any means. I would say, you know, I've always loved having my little hobbies. So the hobby I've picked up this time is knitting, and I'm excited about that and plan to keep doing it. And then I think mutual aid is a big one for both of us this year that I'm really grateful that so many people led the way on that and like opened the door for all mm-hmm. of us to come in. And, you know, I got my recurring donation set up, but I also want to continue to give back and like be a part of my local community in other more meaningful, like specific in-person ways, or let's say like, if not in person, but like, you know, physically like getting out mm-hmm. there, either literally or metaphorically. Like I want to like really connect with my neighborhood, and I'm still trying to figure out how to best do that. But I think where I've kind of landed is I'm just going to do that until I sort of find my home in that regard and just keep doing it because it matters and it helps a lot of people. And I feel really inspired by the people who've led the way in that, or led the charge mm-hmm. in that way in the past
year.
Yeah,
absolutely. I'm right there with you on mutual aid. I feel like, again, like it's one of the many things that has happened over the last year that has kind of like sharpened my critique of like capitalism and the way it alienates us from one another, and it alienates us from our political power, and it alienates us from like both a desire and like the strategic imperative to like center the most vulnerable and marginalized among us and like mm-hmm. work for justice for those people. And mutual mm-hmm. aid, like Philly has such a robust like community of like activists and people who are basically being like, look, like the state is not only isn't helping people, it's harming people. And the only mm-hmm. way people are going to be okay is if the rest of us step in. And mm-hmm. I found that to be really inspiring, and similarly want to like continue to be involved in that. So I'm glad that you brought that up.
Awesome.
I think that's it. I think maybe we talk about a nice thing to end on.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So what do you got, Rachel? What's your nice thing to end on?
My nice thing to end on is that our terrace is open for business. Yesterday, we spent some time like uncovering the furniture that we had covered up, and we had like in covering the furniture and sort of just, it was a mess out there. We had like, things were not cleared or organized in a meaningful way for the winter. So we basically like did that. We fixed that. We did some research. We've got some like new little things coming to help make it a really nice outdoor space this summer. So the weather report today feels like 7. So, you know, it's technically open for business, if not literally, but I'm like very excited to be able to sit out there in a coat and boots and gloves and get some fresh air.
I love that. Spring is in your heart.
It's in my heart. What's yours?
Mine is an album called Come to My Garden by Minnie Riperton.
Okay.
And what's delightful about this, Rachel, is I almost like texted you, but I wanted to tell you on the podcast. So there's a Spotify playlist I've talked about before. It's called My Life is a Movie. Mm-hmm. And I really love it. And there's a song by this artist, Minnie Riperton, on that playlist. And so I ended up just like clicking on her and listening to all of her stuff. And it's really delightful. Mm-hmm. She's an artist in like the 70s, a singer. She has a really beautiful voice. I love it. I highly recommend listening to her, to listening to Come to My Garden specifically. But the thing that's amazing is that, so I was like, I've played it for Andrea. I was like, mm-hmm. I want to play this album. I think you'll like it. And she's like, oh, this is awesome. Like, who is this? And I was like, oh, it's this woman, Minnie Riperton. I don't know much about her. So I went to a Wikipedia page. She's Maya Rudolph's mother.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've read in profiles of Maya Rudolph that her mother is a famous singer. I just didn't know her name. So,
oh,
yes.
Okay. I didn't know any of this. I'm also not really like a music person, so I don't know anything about music or the people that make it. So, everything is always like a delightful surprise to me, but I guess she had like released a couple albums and then sort of stopped singing and was just like living in Florida with her family, like raising her family and stuff, but then was kind of like rediscovered and put out a bunch of albums. And is great. So listen to Come to My Garden. And I love Maya Rudolph so much. Like, she's definitely one of my favorite people on earth. Like, I just feel like someone is doing something right that like Maya Rudolph even exists. So the fact that like this is her mom, like I just got really psyched about that.
That's amazing. That's a great, nice thing to end on.
So yeah, I guess we did it. Thank you everyone for listening to this episode of Oh, I Like That. Please do rate us and review us wherever you listen to podcasts.
You can also follow us on Twitter at OILikeThatPod or email us at OILikeThatPod@gmail.com. You can also follow us individually. I'm at @the_REWM and Sally is at Sally T.
Oh, I Like That is produced by Rachel and Sally and edited by Lucas. Amber Seeger, who is Rocket Orca on social media, designed our logo.